Hello, this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with Bob Strength, Greg Inhofer, and Dale Strength from the local band Pepperfog. Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is August 24th, 2013, and I'm talking with Bob Strength, Greg Inhofer, and Dale Strength from Pepperfog. Guys, could you please state your full name, your hometown, and date of birth, please?
Hey, I'm Bob Strength. I'm out of Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm April 13th, 1951.
Gregory John Benedict Inhofer, Minneapolis, 11-14-50.
Ernest Dale Strength, Greenville, Alabama, 10-31-49.
Oh, you wanted my full name.
Your real name's Ernie, huh?
Yeah.
Robert Wayne Strength.
I thought it was Wainwright.
It is Wainwright.
Okay. So, Bob and Dale, when did you move to Minnesota?
Well, our daddy was a recording artist, major label recording artist on Capitol and Sun, Coral, Four Star. And we traveled around the country a whole lot with him. He was also a DJ. So we lived in various cities. The whole family on both sides is out of Houston, Texas. From Houston, we went to California, where my daddy worked, Bakersfield, Fresno, and Long Beach. And there, we went to Chicago, various places in between. But my daddy, you know, just always had a thing, a love for the North, and he liked Minneapolis. When we did live in Memphis, and Elvis gave him a going-away party, he was going to bring country music up to Minneapolis, and that was his thing that he'd wanted to do. So that was about 1960.
Dale, what was the name of your dad?
Texas Bill Strength. We had many years on the road with him, and when we came to Minneapolis, we met some people. Up until that point, we really didn't have a lot of long-term relationships, of course, and we met a friend of ours, Vern Morris, just a bunch of people. We decided we really liked it here and wanted to stay. And our dad arranged for us to stay with some people, a family called the Norbaums. And they,
the Beetlebaums.
They took us in and, you know, treated us like their own kids for a few years until we popped out on our own. We just loved Minneapolis, loved Minnesota, wanted to stay here.
Okay, and what high school did you guys go to, and what year did you graduate?
Dale, I went to South High School, graduated 67.
Greg, De La Salle High School, 68.
Bob, South High School, summer is 1969.
So how does your first band come about? What's the time frame, and what's the name of the band, and who plays what?
Well, that was a band called City Strangers. That was myself. Larry Norling was on Farfisa, Oregon. Ron Merchant on bass. Brother Bob on drums. We were at South High School, Larry and I, and Ron went to De La Salle High School in Minneapolis.
What did you play, Dale?
I played guitar and sang vocals, and Ron was a bass player. I think it was...
Ron sang vocals too, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Ron did sing, yeah.
Bob, what kind of music did City Strangers play?
I think we started off playing what was going on at that time, and that was surf stuff. A lot of surf stuff.
Yeah.
Instrumentals?
A lot of instrumental stuff. Who are the guys with the Mose Wright guitars?
The Ventures.
And, right. Kind of graduated to some of the English bands, the Animals. Boy, it's kind of hard to remember back that far. A lot of European.
Where groups. Did the City Strangers play? What venues?
What venues? We did, for kids just starting off back in the day, we primarily did school sock hops. We did YMCAs, neighborhood clubs, this and that.
Beek's Pizza on 54th and Lindio.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Band rented out a space at the Fire Barn on 38th and Snelling and put on their own dances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a regular fire station, Dale?
It was a fire station, and I can't remember what they rented out the hall for, but we would we'd get it occasionally and do the advertising. And
where was the Fire Barn located?
That was 38th and
Snelling Avenue.
Did the band play any talent shows at schools?
We did. We did a number of talent shows, primarily that the music stores would put on. I remember one in particular that was very memorable was Trustman Music here in town.
Yeah, we won a talent show at South High School in 1967 and also played at the De La Salle High School Auditorium Assembly. That wasn't a talent show or anything. But
Greg, I understand you joined the City Strangers. What was the time frame on that?
That was January 68, Tom.
And what did you play?
I played guitar and vocals.
And what happened with the band after you joined?
After I joined, everything went to hell. We changed our name and we changed our musical style.
What was the new name of the band?
The new name of the band was Rubber Band.
One word or two?
That was one word.
Okay.
We had Dale Strength on guitar and he sang vocals. Myself on guitar and I sang vocals. Larry Norling on Farfi's organ and he sang vocals. Ron Merchant on bass guitar, and he sang vocals.
That's a lot of vocals.
Bob Strength on drums, and he sang vocals.
That's a lot of vocals.
It is. It was.
Was there a change in the musical direction?
Yes, we started playing cover songs from hard rock bands of the time, including Jimi Hendrix, The Cream. People used to call it The Cream. Jimi Hendrix, Cream, The Who, Rolling Stones, and Vanilla Fudge. At one point in our life, I think we had 14 Hendrix songs, 11 Cream, and one Who.
Mm-hmm.
That was our whole book.
Mm-hmm.
So the music was changing at this time period. Were there other bands in town who were playing the hard rock, I guess I would call it?
I'm sure there were, but we...
This was more considered, I believe, underground.
Yeah.
Underground music.
That would be more descriptive of the music.
I believe so. And we primarily brought Greg in as a guitar player because he knew all that Hendrix stuff. We just thought it would be great, not knowing at that time that we would go that direction and discover that he played keyboards as well, and then replacing Larry Norling with just Greg Inhofer.
With the change in musical style to the underground rock music, was there a change in the physical appearance of the band on stage as far as what you wore, etc.?
Yeah, no, there was, because that's when we went down to that little shop down on 7th Street. What was the name of it? All the bands shopped there.
March 4th?
No.
I remember.
Right on 7th Street, right off of Hennepin. There was a little clothing store that sold pimp clothes. And we went in and got our English
not
looking.
Kiefer's.
Might have been Kiefer's. Yeah, it might have been Kiefer's.
On 6th and Hennepin.
Was Kiefer's.
Yeah.
Okay, so what kind
of clothes? We got our English look, you know, with the little ascot shirts and the ruffled shirts and the
jackets.
Beetle boots and, right. And, you know, cool little jackets. And we wore sunglasses and stuff.
Now, are you booking your own jobs at this point, or are you signed with an agency?
I don't think we got with an agency yet.
I don't think that happened until we were with Flight, when we changed the name after.
We have not talked about musical equipment yet. What type of musical equipment were you playing at this time?
Wow, I think we the popular equipment back in that time was Marshall amps, Vox amps.
And what kind of guitar did you play, Dale?
I think at the time I had a, it was an old 55 Stratocaster.
Telecaster.
It was a Strat, and then I had a Telecaster, right, an old one. I traded the Strat for a Tele. I wish I still had that Strat. It'd probably be worth...
Retirement
money right now.
Greg, what were you playing at this point?
Well, like Dale said, Marshall and things like that, and Fender and Gibson were the instruments of the era. Of course, I could not afford any of those, so I had an Airline amp and an Airline guitar, but I took a magic marker and I drew on the headstock the little black piece that looks like a Rickenbacker. So I made a Rickenbacker out of this Airline guitar by drawing the little headstock piece
the
on
R.
it. Right. Yeah, and that little, like, the it's white on the black ones, a little white, like a whale's tooth or something.
Where did you find the Airline guitar and amp originally?
Got it up at a little place up on West Broadway, North Minneapolis. Don't remember the name. A little music store.
Bob, what kind of drums were you playing?
I was a Ludwig man.
Where'd you get your first drum set?
Actually, my first drum set came from my brother, who was nice enough to save his money and buy me a 1960s Slingerland set. And then when we started doing this era, we went to Charlie Wagner, just a great man in town who helped all the musicians out, who had Levon Music for years and years, still out there. But he got me into his Ludwig set of drums when I was about 16, 16 and a half.
Was that Big Daddy Wags?
That was Big Daddy Wags' brother.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And let's see, do we know what kind of bass guitar Ron was playing?
No. I think it was a,
He didn't have that Guild, did he?
I think it was a Guild.
The Blonde Guild?
The Blonde Guild, that's
God,
right.
He had that forever then.
He would have gotten that from B-Sharp.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. How much money you got in your pocket?
Yep.
$200. Come back when you got $250.
With the new band, do you continue to play at the high schools?
We did. We played some sock hops, one at De La Salle. We played we even played a semi-formal dance at West High School.
So how did the new music go over with the crowds at this point?
We were going over really well. We kind of hit on the vein of the underground, like Bob mentioned earlier. That was the big thing. Everybody was kind of getting away from the radio music and listening to the offcuts on certain albums.
But you could still dance to the the music, right?
Right.
So everyone was happy. What happens next in the history of Rubber Band?
We scared Larry out of the band.
What scared him away?
I think he found the underground music to be too weird for him.
Okay.
So he left in April of 68.
And that's when we changed the name from Rubber Band to Flight. James Donna started booking the band.
Jim Donna from the Castaways?
Liar, Liar, yep. By the Castaways. Jim's on.
Booking agent, Liar, Liar, they kind of fit in.
Now, I understand Flight did some recording at the basement studio of George Garrett's record shop, which was called, I believe, Nickel Lake Records.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Bob, what do you recall about that, and when was that?
You know, I'm going to refer to my brother on that one.
Well, I remember the session. It was a lot of fun. We played it live. Back then, we didn't know what overdubbing was or anything. We just played everything live. And as a matter of fact, I still came across those recordings not too long ago, and they were very, very good. They stand up.
Dale, do you recall any of the songs you recorded at the basement studio with George Garrett?
The one I remember is Sugar and Spice. That's the one that we sent to KDWB as an entry in a nationwide band contest sponsored by MGM Movies.
That was a song by the Crying Shames out of Chicago, correct?
Right.
So this was entered into the contest. And what was the contest for?
It was a movie called The Impossible Years, and the winning band was would get to go to another level in Chicago. We had to go to another
semifinals.
Another competition.
And I also understand that winning that got you a job for an opening act for a young teenage pop star out of India, correct?
Yes,
Sajid Khan. I think we worked a gig with him.
Yeah, we opened for him at the Minneapolis Armory, and he came riding in on an elephant.
Yeah.
Didn't he also, wasn't he on a television show as well?
Yes. Yes, he was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we took I think it was December in 68, we went to Chicago, did the finals for the talent show.
What happened in Chicago?
You mean what happened that we can admit to?
Yes.
Well, when we got there, they wanted us to lip sync the song, which, you know, I mean, we had brought our gear on the plane, and that was just ridiculous to us to lip sync. So we ended up, I know I plugged my keyboard into my boot, and Dale and Ron ran a long cord between the bass and the guitar. And we lip synced the song
Sugar and Spice.
Sugar and Spice. And we did not win. And we were sent back home the very same day. But they did send us first class both ways.
I understand you wore your stage outfits on the flight.
Yeah, well, I mean, why carry all that extra luggage?
Tell me a little bit more about Chicago. Do you recall any of the other bands there?
Not by name. Just the one we ripped off for a case of beer and a bottle of Jack Daniels.
How did that happen?
We went up, they were the winners, and we went up to their room because they got a room. And we went up to congratulate them, and while we were there, Bob called room service and ordered a case of Heineken and a bottle of Jack Daniels. And when the knock at the door came, there was a bunch of people in the room, so Bob answered the door and signed it on the room check. You know, he just scribbled a name on there. And he said, just leave it out in the hall here. And then we left.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So your big opportunity to be in an MGM movie fell through. What happened to the band when you returned to Minneapolis?
Well, we decided to try and get it together a little bit business-wise, and we hired Joe Budnick, who was still an old friend of ours, as our manager, and he was quite good at the time.
Of course, he was in high school.
It was kind of the Little Rascals kind
only
of...
Only the top for us.
Little Rascals.
And you start rehearsing in Joe's basement?
We do.
What part of town was Joe in?
North Minneapolis.
Dale, I understand you hear a song by Spirit that has an impact on you. What was that song and what's the story?
Oh, yeah, that was great. That was a big paradigm shift, I think, at that time. It was Fresh Garbage was the name of the song by a group called Spirit.
Where did you hear it?
I can't recall where I heard it the first time. I know I bought the album and brought it to rehearsal.
At this time, too, Greg was still on guitar, but when we heard Spirit, they had the keyboard in there at the piano. Greg said, "Hey, guys, I play piano." And we said, "Really?"
Well, Dale had picked up a Wurlitzer.
I went to a Catholic church sale and bought a Wurlitzer piano for $50 and brought it, and we kind of had it hanging out at the rehearsal
space. So he wants to learn this song with this lick in it on piano, and both Ron and I were in the same position as far as we had taken lessons in grade school, and we could still, through high school, play our memorized recital pieces and horse around on the piano. But there was an acoustic piano in Joe's basement and this little Wurlitzer. And so Ron and I sat down, and whoever could learn the lick the fastest was going to play keyboard on that song, not knowing that that guy would probably go on to be the keyboard player for not only Pepper Fog, but other bands in the future. If Ron would have learned it a split second earlier, I would probably be a bass player today.
So in other words, you finished the keyboard lick
just a split second before Ron.
And that made you the keyboard player.
For that song.
For that song.
But then we started adding more and more keyboard songs. So
with the added keyboards, did the selection of music change?
Oh, yeah, a lot. Because even though I'd studied piano, you know, taken lessons in grade school, I never made the connection between the keyboard and inner emoting. Musically, it was just something you played out of memory or horsed around on. But guitar, when I learned guitar in high school, that was something that just came from me. I wasn't necessarily, you know, even though I was learning things like Hendrix or this or that. And when I started playing keyboards, I started writing on keyboards, as opposed to all my other stuff was written on guitar. And that changed things for me immensely.
So how does the band Flight become Pepper Fog, and what's the time frame?
I'd say it was probably early 1969. I think we were all watching a performance of Jimi Hendrix at the Monterey Pop Festival on TV, and noticed that off to the side of the stage there were some large boxes that had stamped on the side the name Pepper Fog, which is a chemical used by the police for crowd control. And we really liked the name. And
Your face. Yes. Yeah. It's in your face, rock and roll.
In your face.
So we were kind of looking for a new name at the time. I mean, one possibility was Sun, Moon, Cat, Dog. We passed on that.
So you all like the name Pepper Fog?
Yeah, we went with that. Some of the local bands that influenced us the most were bands like Joker's Wild, and we thought that was a cool name, and it was a really cool band, and they were doing the material we liked, and South 40, which became Crow.
The Litter,
an all-girl band named 19th Amendment. Just a clique of cool bands in town that we got to know and influence us a whole lot musically, as well as turning us on to material. We also discovered new booking agents, such as David Anthony at the time.
So booking with David Anthony, I assume you played some out-of-town jobs.
Oh, yeah.
How did that go?
We loved it. You remember now, we're just kids, and we're doing our thing.
I think our first job as Pepper Fog was at Dania Hall on the West Bank by the University of Minnesota.
Probably with Tony Glover and Willie Murphy, Willie and the Bees, people like that.
Yeah.
Could you guys sort of paint a picture of Dania Hall, what it looked like?
About the third floor of a big building, big arched roof, I believe. The hot smell of marijuana wafting through the air. The occasional waft of incense.
Permeating.
And patchouli oil.
Right.
Did they have an elevator for you to bring your gear up there?
No, Tom, they didn't.
So playing at Dania Hall involved hauling your gear up a number of flights?
No, it meant telling the roadies that they had to haul the gear up a couple of flights.
So you guys have roadies at this
four
point.
Four flights, Denny?
It was the fourth floor.
Fourth floor.
Over Richter Drug.
Yeah.
That's right.
I think it's the craziest thing that we were kids at the time, having roadies, and now that we're older, we're doing our own gear. Does that make sense?
That's not right. That's not right.
My back says it isn't.
Yeah.
Well, let's give the roadies some credit. What were their names?
Mike Brandt was one. Bob Corgan, the guy that we would go to the gigs and we'd bring a shirt, a stage shirt. We'd wear the same jeans and shoes, but we'd have a stage shirt. And I got to the gig one time and the roadies were all set up and came time to change, and I went looking for my shirt and it was nowhere to be found. And I look out in the audience and here walking around in the club is Bob Corgan with my damn shirt on. I said, Bob, give me my shirt.
The roadie. Yeah.
He said, well, I gotta have it to pick up chicks.
Okay, so Dania Hall was sort of a place where alternative types of music was played and alternative type people hung out?
Well stated.
Yeah. Hippies. They were hippies. And we loved them. We knew they were our people.
Did you play at any of the anti-war protests at the U of M?
We played at a bunch of them. Yep. Over at Kauffman Union.
Yep.
Anything come to mind thinking about those?
Oh, besides the black armbands and...
Face it, Tom. We weren't there as an anti-war protest. We were there to pick up chicks. Chicks that smelled like patchouli oil.
That permeated
patchouli oil. Exactly. Let's not kid anybody.
Now, I have heard from other band members there were certain concerts known as love-ins.
Oh, yeah.
that occurred at various places, including Loring Park, mm-hmm. Powderhorn Park, and the West Bank. Did you guys participate?
And another one out at Flying Cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So you played the one at Flying Cloud?
Yeah, we played the love festivals. Let's not kid ourselves, Tom. It wasn't about love. It was about getting laid by permeating patchouli chicks oil. With patchouli oil, yes.
But no, we were a regular at those events because, I mean, after all, it was our kind of people. It was hippie people that went to them.
You were a bra salesman, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I guess in 2013, it's time to tell the truth about the love-ins. What went on, Bob?
A lot of loving. I tell you what, it was a lot of loving. A lot of good music. Just a great atmosphere. Everybody had their dogs with their bandanas under dogs and their marijuana and beers.
And we learned if you see a half a quart of orange juice laying on the grass, don't drink it because it's most likely filled with hallucinogenic drugs.
Dale, what do you recall about the love-ins?
Freedom.
Freedom.
Absolute freedom. Yeah, it was just a wonderful time to be alive. I think it was one of the best points in history to be around. It was just great. Fantastic.
We had a distinction because none of our gear ever got ripped off. We could move around and go anywhere and be under trees, and none of our gear ever got ripped off.
Of course, it helped to have the Hells Angels on our side, too.
That's right.
You know.
Oh, you and the Rolling Stones both hired the Hells
Angels. We didn't hire them. They took a liking to Pepper Fog because one of our roadies, a guy named John Aho at the time.
Oh, what Aho?
Yeah, John Aho. He was a wannabe biker. He had the jean jacket and he had the cut-off leather vest, but he had no colors. But John had a talent, and his talent was... And this is the story we've heard. He was at a party once where Uppy, the president for Hell's Angels locally, and the secretary, I can't remember his name, were there, and a lot of bikers. And Uppy, the president of the Hell's Angels, came up to John, saw that he had no colors on his back. He said, "What are you doing here?"
By colors, you mean what?
Motorcycle gang colors on the back of the vest.
Okay.
You know, their club emblem. And he told John he couldn't be there. Well, John took his beer out of his hand, took a bite out of the top of it, glass bottle, chewed it up and swallowed it in front of Uppy. And Uppy was so impressed that John was a regular, he could come and go into their parties. And when they found out he worked for Pepper Fog, they took a liking to us. And when we played Labor Temple, when we played anywhere, there was always half a dozen bikers across the front of the stage making sure nobody messed with our stuff.
Feeding John light bulbs and beer bottles. And
yeah.
Razor blades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did blue blades on his molars.